Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Soulmate Within Summit. And today, in this session, I'm very excited to welcome Anaya Sophia, who is calling in all the way from the beautiful country of the Cathars in the south of France. And Anaya is quite an extraordinary mystic, and will be speaking to us today about the path of courageous relationship. So welcome, Anaya.
Thank you, Shakti. It's wonderful to be back on the call with you again.
Thank you. And so I want to say a little bit more about Anaya, who is a very extensively published author. She's written a number of books, Open Your Heart with Kundalini Yoga, Pilgrimage of Love, Womb Wisdom, Sacred Sexual Union, The Rose Night, and her latest book, The Divine Relationship, is going to be published this year, and feels like it's connected to the topic that we'll speak about today, that Anaya has so much wisdom to offer on. So Anaya is a mystic, an author, and an initiator of sacred marriage. And she's a wellspring of both wisdom and experience, and is known for her role in birthing new paradigm relationships. Also divine sexuality and the awakening of the sacred body. Anaya administers the feminine expression of the Christ consciousness coming through the spiritual tradition of Mary Magdalene, a continuous lineage with the feminine principle that throughout the centuries has preserved its spiritual dignity without needing permission or recognition from the patriarchy. So very extraordinary women, and so deeply embodied as well, Anaya. You carry such a fine frequency, as your bio expresses, but you bring it all the way into embodiment, not only in your own body, but also in relationship. And I see that your passion and unyielding faith in this process is both infectious and dependable, and that's been my experience of you in the ways that I've been able to be witness to you and to tune into the beautiful transmission that you have. And so let's start off by asking you, what is the true divine marriage between two lovers? And what could this lead to? I know that you have a very unique understanding of what you mean by divine marriage. And so I'd love for you to introduce us to your understanding of that concept.
That was a beautiful intro, Shakti. Thank you. I think I would say that you're feeling all of this stuff around me because I'm really doing my utmost not only to make sense of it, but to also experience it 24 hours a day. So I'm here in the south of France, literally in this field, in this relationship with this work, with this frequency, constantly. And, you know, I am a work in progress. And I believe that's what you're feeling. You're feeling that progressive, continuous step forward within myself and within all my surroundings. And for me, what is the divine marriage? For me, the divine marriage at this stage, and as you can imagine, maybe in a year's time it's going to be a different answer, but right here, right now, it is the immaculate and ecstatic union of the inner masculine and the inner feminine, which will make one being. And then that one being marrying the divine or soulful self. So to me, it's like a cross. It's four beings actually getting married, four aspects of self. The masculine marrying the feminine, which makes the androgyne, and then the androgyne turning back or turning forward and marrying the divine spiritual soul self. And I believe, I truly believe, this is the meaning of the cross that we see in many religious iconography, left and right, above and below.
So, Anaya, I am very curious to understand your perception of the inner marriage between the inner masculine and the inner feminine, what that means to you. And I've actually got a number. I'm so excited about what you're sharing, but let me just start with that first question. So what does that mean to you? If you say we start with the divine marriage between our own inner masculine and feminine.
For me, it's about embodying the two qualities with great ease and seamless transition. So in a moment's notice, one can move quite cleanly into their feminine expression. And then, of course, as life shapeshifts around us, we can glide with great elegance into our masculine expression. So that would mean that in the masculine, one is absolutely clear, directive, and able to make choices based upon the inherent authentic truth of their being without fear of judgment, humiliation, or not being popular. The masculine simply doesn't care about those things at all. He will just direct his life force in the most authentic path that serves the soul, that serves the true essence. So that's what I mean by the divine masculine. And for the feminine, that would be the ability to immediately open the heart and to embrace and to comfort and bless and absolutely nourish self and whoever is within the field. And for me, that is a divine marriage. But that's still not all of it. That's just one step.
And what's the next step then? Please tell us more.
See, to me, the masculine and the feminine are very earth-based expressions. So once I've brought those two together on the inside, then there's a sense of oneness. And then I take another step, and that other step would be to glide up more into the realm of the soul. And then I would pull in an aspect of myself, the very first part of my expression, so right at the beginning of when I was simply a pulsating soul, and then given the encoding to be human. So I'd pull that part into me, which is, you could say, the beginning. And then I'd draw towards me the being that I could become. So if I really continued with this divinization process, so my divine being, I'd bring the divine being in as well. And then you simply have the beginning, the middle, and the end of your whole existence. And that is a very fine frequency. That is a very refined and high place to sit and to come from, to be from.
That's so beautiful, Anaya. And then that leads me to my next question, which is you were speaking about then bringing that fine frequency of inner union on these different levels, bringing that in relationship to another, I think, if I understood you correctly, but you spoke about the being in relationship with the divine masculine and feminine in the other, so that there's a, my understanding of that is that you are seeing and living and evoking the divinity, the divine essence of each other in a partnership. Is that correct? Would you explain to us more? Yeah.
It's more of like an honoring. I mean, a lot of people talk about self-love, and I'm not sure we really understand what that means anymore. I know for a fact I don't, But if I use the word honoring, am I honoring myself? Am I spending time honoring myself and my vulnerabilities and my tender places and my strengths and my gifts? Then I understand more. Ah, okay, I understand what honoring is. And so from that place of honoring, I'm then able to honor the other one. And even though I'm in the female body, I can honor Pete, which is my partner. I can honor his feminine self, and I can honor his masculine self. And of course, he's going to be doing the same thing back to me. So then we have this four-way relationship yet again. So even though Pete's in the masculine form, he's in the masculine body, he still needs honoring. His feminine self still needs honoring. So does his masculine self. And so it's like the two of us, we're watering one another as if we were gardeners.
Mm.
You know, we're like enticing these elements out of one another.
Yeah, and then this sense of, you were speaking about the possibility of who we can be. And then I imagine that's part of it in the union with another is the evocation, the seeing, the honoring of that, and then bringing
that's
that
right.
into embodiment. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And the being, you know, the psyche, the body, when we start this honoring process, then the human part of us begins to feel very, very safe. And that's what we call the safe container. A safe container, a crucible, a vessel, a grail is now being made. And it's being made by this honoring process, this incredible, deep, and robust love that's flowing within the self and then out towards the other. Now, what this means and what it has most definitely meant for me and Pete is this immaculate trustworthiness, this safety brings up all the other elements that have kept us away from this, that causes us to resist, separate, distrust, doubt, become confused. So we must weave this into the realization that, of course, there's this wonderful blissful stage, and then comes the tumultuous stage. And that when the tumultuous stage comes, that's when I really, really, really recommend that you lean very heavily into your internal marriage. Don't lean too much on the marriage with the other one, because he or she is also going to feel incredibly unnerved by what's happening. So that's when you have to come back to yourself and really honor yourself deeply, deeply, deeply. Let that wound come up. And let the relationship breathe. So togetherness, aloneness, togetherness, aloneness.
And I'm hearing in what you're saying that the importance of allowing this to happen, to allowing the wounds to come up, that this is actually a necessary and important part of this divine union.
Yes, it's inevitable. I don't think we even have the luxury of deciding whether we allow it or not. Well, I know I didn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but we can try our best to suppress it and you know, ignore it, judge it, try and push it away, you know, entertain it away, whatever, you know. Whereas I think what you're talking about is, you know, is actually an honoring of the wounds as well, as that, but that is made possible by our honoring of our inner union. And also, would you say that even in the midst of all that material coming up, still at least endeavoring to find the honoring of the other, even though they may not be displaying that?
Yeah, at times, Shakti, it was so hard for the pair of us. I mean, I've done about 20 years worth of spiritual work. I've sat with gurus. I've been to ashrams. I've done very intense spiritual adventuring. But what is coming up in this union, no spiritual teacher had a hope in heaven of finding. It is even surprising me. The great depth of grief, I suppose, that was still within my little being. And that's why I'm so excited by this, because the power of investigation, you know, the being just opens up and says, okay, let's do this. Let's go deeper than we've ever, ever gone before. And it's with your beloved, it's with your best friend, it's with the one that you truly, truly love the most. And I must say, there will be times when you think you don't love anymore. And that's when you go to your inner marriage. You find the love by any means necessary. Find that love. You know, the old paradigm, you have a feeling, oh, I don't love him or her anymore. Let's quit the relationship. That's the old paradigm. New paradigm,
right.
Leave the relationship alone. Come into your own solitude. Pray, meditate, do yoga, dance, whatever. Find your love. You must find the source of love.
And that's so beautiful, Naya.
Yeah, and then you just go back into the relationship going, I'm back for more. I do believe things have to separate. I do not believe that. If the pair of you are fully committed, there is no reason why it cannot keep growing and growing and growing and growing.
Yeah. I feel such a deep truth in what you're saying, and also in my own experience. And I've noticed that if there's a real willingness to return to love for oneself, like you say, into that inner sacred union, then there is love. And in that process, I realized that actually every time I return away from my partner because I think the love is gone, it's actually because it was gone inside. It got obscured, and then once it's there again, it's ignited between us.
Yes, 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 yes. And when you're filled with love or honor and you see or sense or hear the partner being, I don't know, in a way that could trigger you, you're more likely to smile and go, oh, bless. But if you're low on your own love quota, then you're going to get triggered because you're looking at the partner as being the source of love and the source of your happiness, the source of your joy and safety and trustability. But if you're filled on the inside with your own trust, your own elegance and radiance, it's going to be less triggering if you see or hear some perfectly orchestrated situations to help more wounds arise. It's a win-win situation, really.
And what I also just want to ask you about is we speak about this perfect poise and elegance that we can develop in returning to love for ourselves. Is that, you know, I know sometimes that gets misunderstood as that, you know, we just have to be independent enough from each other that we don't get vulnerable. And I so know that's not what you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely. Let me see if I can word this. So, yes, I mean, I have been very prone to being independent. I am an only child, so it's a very well-known state to be in. And that is so not where I'm heading with Pete, not at all. I'm looking all the time for more vulnerability, more openness, more trustability, more tenderness. So when I go into my inner marriage, it's not so that I can shapeshift into an independent woman again and get my life spiraling around me and heading in the direction I want it to go. I'm praying only to become more vulnerable and to be more available and more soft and more gentle for this relationship. So all of my self-love, I'm praying for it to grow in strength so that I can become more vulnerable and more loving and kind and all of that good stuff for the union. But I must say, Shakti, in the past, I have most definitely, you know, buttoned myself back up again and become this independent. And, of course, that feels really good. That feels really good. But that is not, that's not where I'm heading, and it's not where I recommend. Because that's a little bit of a fib. That's not divine marriage at all. Of course not.
Yeah.
That's called keeping yourself fit.
When you speak like this, I so feel the presence of the Christ and Mary Magdalene, you know, archetype and embodiment, and that.
Yeah.
And Mary Magdalene, there was such a mutual undoing, such a willingness to be undone by each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I, you know, I listen a lot to Andrew Harvey. He talks so passionately about this process as well. Rumi. So I'm constantly supporting myself with others who've been on this journey.
Which is a wonderful idea, because it requires that. So it's very full on.
Yes. Yes, and I do believe, you know, a community is almost required to do this. You know, a community like us, Shakti, where we can turn to one another and go, oh my God, I think I'm nearing the quitting stage. And of course, you know, we'll come in and go, no, don't do it, hang in there a little bit longer. You know the gift comes in on the 11th hour. Because of course it is a very solitary process. It's you and the partner and God absolutely spiraling and alchemizing together. And then, you know, every so often you come out of the intensity, and it's so lovely to fall back into this awaiting community who's holding that same code and frequency. You know, just send you back in the arena once you feel ready and able again.
Yeah, beautiful. I'm aware that this is part of my intention with creating this summit, is to bring together more of a sense of community and support for people across the world around, you know, the mutual exploration of this possibility. So so appreciate that you're, you know, willing to bring your wisdom into that. And I want to ask you, if we go to the feminine, I'm going to take the feminine first, because you have your description of the feminine, and you spoke specifically, and when we prepared for this call, about the feminine as embodying the erotic, ecstatic lover. Can you say more about that? That's such a beautiful description of the feminine.
Well, I notice it, this particular quality, when I'm listening to Andrew Harvey, for instance. So Andrew Harvey, he kind of does something to me. He ignites my longing. He ignites my longing the same way Rumi does. It's a frequency. I can't actually put my finger on what it is, but I know this kind of like erotic nature sparks a tremendous like tsunami of energy within me that is full of longing. Yes, of course, this includes Pete, but more than that, it includes his soul, it includes his ancestors, it includes all of creation. It's a longing for something that we or I may never actually find in this world. But that does not stop me. that is the least of my interests. You know, will I ever satisfy this longing? I don't know. I don't care. I don't need to know. All I need to do is to let this energy just ripple out. And that is what I mean by the ecstatic, erotic lover. It doesn't necessarily mean I put on my fancy underwear and undulate around the bedroom. That is not what I mean, although that includes that element. It is way beyond what humans think erotic nature is. Yeah. Erotic nature is, for me, the whole of life. It's not just me trying to be sexual or sensual. It is a whole-bodied a whole-bodied drop into this effervescent state of longing, and it's filled with passion. What I call a golden passion. It's just passionate for everything. It's like a insatiable hunger and thirst for more aliveness, more expression, more joy, something like that. That's what I mean by the erotic lover. Yeah. So you
gorgeous.
Can be the erotic lover.
It feels like this big golden flower that just opens and opens and opens to feel more, to receive more, to give more.
Yeah. And there's this happiness inside of it. You know, sometimes people think erotic and it's like very sexual and, you know, you're pulling all the sexual faces. Yes, that's there. But then there's also this golden happiness, you know, this smile, this crinkly eyes, wet eyes, gorgeous eyes filled with love and happiness and joy and playfulness. That's what I mean by erotic.
Ah, that's so beautiful. Yeah, I feel so happy to hear you say that, because it's definitely my experience of eroticism as well. And I think it's so unfortunate that we limit our understanding of eroticism so tightly, because everything is erotic in that sense of that endless longing of life to reach for more of a devotional expression of who we are through everything.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So then the sacred masculine, engendering the knower of truth. Tell us more about that.
Absolutely. Well, as I explained the feminine just a moment ago, I expect you heard me getting all wriggly and, you know, and I'm sat here on the side of my bed, wriggling around and, you know, using my hands to express things. But then when we come to the knower of truth, the divine masculine, that is like a pillar presence of unmoving, unyielding, absolute union with the authentic truth of your own soul and the design of your lifetime. So this is a very still presence. It doesn't care less about judgment, humiliation, being unpopular. It absolutely speaks what it requires, what it needs, and what it is going to do. And it's immaculate. It is immaculate with its truth. There's no distilling. There's no minimizing. There's certainly no compromising. It is an exquisite allegiance to the truth that you know you're carrying in your own soul. And there's nothing you can do but just simply go forward and step into it. Now, this is where it's difficult. Because, yes, we're in a patriarchal age. Masculine energy has been very prevalent. And so I'm noticing there's a lot of us who are a little bit cautious about going back into the masculine and utilizing it again, imagining it's what we're moving away from. But this divine masculine presence, the one I've just described, this is where we're heading. I feel this is the only way I can describe it at the moment, and it's very limited. But I've got a sense of it on the inside. So as a woman, I'm being invited to not compromise my truth at all. Not compromise no part of me, to take directive choices in ways that serve the radiance and the elegance of my soul and the extending of that out into the world. Now that's a little bit tricky, because no one has taught us how to do that, and we can be so afraid of judgment and humiliation and not being popular. But that's the invitation. That's the invitation, to be that noble, to be that honorable of self.
It almost sounds like the reinvention of the old the archetypes of the masculine, like that stands for the noble cause, that knows how to ask the right question.
And
doesn't get deterred by challenges that come along.
That's right. Mm. And we're gonna really need that part, you know, as we really well and truly leave the last vestiges of the old paradigm behind. When we take those massive leaps of faith, where we let the old model literally diminish. You know, the old model of relationship. It's a very scary time at the moment. You know, we're looking around at all these new types of relationships: polyamory, conscious relationships, sacred union, holy consort. What is it? You know, we're looking, going, wow, what are these new models? And of course, the old paradigm. There's some elements of beauty in there. So I don't say let's trash the old paradigm. Let's take what worked, check and check again. Is this serving the soul? Is this really serving growth? And if the divine masculine replies with a yes, beloved, this is serving the growth of the pair of you, then bring that element with you. And it is a scary time. You know, there's so many options out there. And the new model is, really. We're all just giving it a go.
There are all these options, and then there's also a kind of sense in what you're saying that we're also in a very potent time in terms of, you know, that right now there is such a longing for sacred relationship. And why is relationship changing so radically? What do you think is at the heart of that? What is it that we really are longing for?
Well, I've had a little bit of an insight recently. Because of what I'm experiencing with Pete, this vulnerability, this trustability, this willingness to open, and this great, great depth of love because all of this beautiful stuff is happening, we're both noticing that we are creating a certain frequency between us and within us that's kind of just like splaying out into our lifestyle. And I'm wondering, Shakti, is this the birthing force of the new paradigm, of this evolutionary shift? Because I've never trusted someone or myself as much as I'm trusting right now. And from that comes a great peace. And that great peace sort of radiates this, what I call this golden happiness, this golden love. And I'm wondering, is this the frequency that the Great Mother is asking all of her children to hold so that she can birth this next stage? Because if we're not warring, you know, if the masculine and the feminine, the men and the women are not warring, but they are immaculately trusting one another and opening up and healing their deepest wounds that no guru or no ashram or no spiritual practice had a hope in heaven of ever touching, only the sacred heart, only union with another can find this stuff. It's the result of that, the vibration that is going to set in place, you know, the fertile ground for the great mother to come in and go, right, okay, let's lift this whole thing to the next level. Because it feels like that. It feels like we're midwives. We're holding a new quality of beingness.
You're talking to the great power that is in the possibility of relationship. How, when we really open to sacred relationship, how it can change the whole possibility of humanity and where we can go to.
We all know that, you know. Back in the days, we used to call it the honeymoon phase. You know those moments when you meet someone, you're in love and all of that stuff. That happiness, that absolute happiness, that touches everything. That touches your family, your finances, your home, your pets, your job, your work, your inspiration, your health, your body, your beauty. We know that. We know the honeymoon period is amazing. And suddenly everyone's having this kind of like euphoric couple of months. What I'm noticing again and again and again and again is when you do this work, this sacred union work with the other, you can prolong that honeymoon period. And it's not even a honeymoon period anymore, because that's just based on chemicals and hormones. This is something else. This is the heart and the soul just opening up to the next level and dragging all your wounds and your ancestors and your traumas, just dragging the whole timeline with it, literally turning yourself inside out. I'm very excited about this.
I mean, I'm just listening to this extraordinary unfolding that you're experiencing in your relationship, and I'm you can imagine that there are listeners out there who would love to know more about how do you do it? What does it take? Can you give some more guidance as to what shifts a relationship from being, you know, just another round of the old paradigm into truly being the kind of sacred relationship with the degree of trust and possibility that you're experiencing there?
Well, the first thing I would say is it takes two beings. It needs to be the pair of you. The pair of you are willing and able to show up in this full way. And what we're doing is we're actually offering us like a sacred union 3-month taster. We've actually come up with this little concept. Just to see how people can get on. So it's a sacred marriage concept and an inner marriage concept, where you literally put yourself in this cauldron. So we don't call them vows or rules. We call them oaths. So there's like 9 oaths that you make to yourself and you make to the other if you're doing it with another one. And you just do your very best to live by them for 3 months, which is plenty of time, to see how you fare up to this commitment to impeccable honesty and the vulnerability to just keep on trusting in love, even if it's looking like a no-go zone on the outside. Be vulnerable, open. Trust. And I do believe within that 3-month period you will get a bodily sensing of whether you're up for it or whether the partner is up for it. It takes a particular quality. You don't have to be magical in any way. I would say tremendous maturity is an asset. Just someone who's really grounded and knows their selves and all the little sneaky backdoor ways of escaping. And if you're able to see that about yourself, then you stand a very fine chance of not taking that old path of withdrawing, staying separate, resisting, doubting, being distracted. But it does take two, Shakti. And at the moment, I see a lot of partnerships, and only one is like burning for this, and the other one is like, well, you know, maybe. But you need two burning hearts.
Do you think it's possible for one to be so on fire that they can ignite the other, even if they're not so inspired from the onset?
I can't answer that question.
Hmm.
I don't know. I don't want to say no, it's not possible, in case I'm horrendously wrong. But my experience so far has been no, it's not possible. But that's just me. That's just my path. I want to be horrendously wrong.
Yeah.
Who knows?
And then I want to ask you more about, you're talking about these sneaky back doors that we use to escape from the cauldron. Do you find that some of the kind of new relationship paradigms and even the old relationship paradigms that sometimes we can use some kind of model or paradigm of relationship actually as a way of escaping from that cauldron?
Of course. I mean, I'm going to be quite outrageous and say something here, because it's been my personal experience, and it's what I see. But then again, I am quite biased because I'm really into sacred union. But I kind of see that happening in the polyamory world. It's like when a little bit of intensity builds up with the primary partner, no problem. You just pop over and see the secondary partner. And that's where I know there's steps and stages along the way. I've tried the polyamorous thing, not for very long, just for a few months, enough for me to go, oh my God, this is not good for a person like me, because I could see the backdoor technique. You know, as soon as there's a little bit of uncomfortability arising, change partner, no problem. And also, there was no divine element in the polyamory world. There was no interest of, you know, the burning soul and wanted to move into, you know, more divinity and more kindness and more extending out into the world in this innocent and glorious way that did not harm any man, woman, or child. That wasn't there. For me, it was just a very earthly experience of freeing up, you know, your own psyche of the wrongs and rights of sexuality.
And I can share that for you, it's really so important that, you know, whatever paradigm you're talking about, that you're, you know, really fully giving yourself and committing into the creating of this space that will take you both deeper, and where you're not gonna choose to fool yourself, really, because I think that's my experience, is that we keep on actually fooling ourselves because we don't want to lose face, and then in the argument with a partner or in issues coming up, it's such a dance to not choose this, you know, not to choose saving face or being right above what can be revealed through the undoing in the union with another.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, Anaya, why do you think is this happening now? This new level of revelation of what is possible in sacred union with a partner that you're experiencing in yourself and that you're sensing as a happening in the world? Why do you think is it happening now?
For me, I see relationship as being the last place now for this spiritual evolution to come into. It's like we've looked at everything else. We've looked at nutrition, we've looked at ecology, politics, finances, education. And finally, now we're in the relationship world, the relationship realm. And of course, we've got to remember, relationship always creates either physical offspring or non-physical offspring. There's always a creation. When you bring one and another one, you get a third being. You cannot not create in relationship. You can create heaven or you can create a hell. It's totally up to you. And that's why, and that's when, you know, earlier I was speaking about, is this level of opening and depth and love and trustability, is this the new frequency that, you know, the whole of us are going to be holding so that the mother or God, whatever we want to call it, can really shift this next leap into a higher consciousness, more expansion. So that part of the answer will cover what you're asking. That's what I truly believe. Relationship births creation, either a child or a non-physical child. You know, the Godhead is asking us to create. It's like, okay, guys, you're on Earth. I need you to hold a particular frequency because you are little batteries running around on legs. Please hold this frequency. It's needed for everything. It's needed for the forests, the oceans, the moon, Mars, Jupiter, the solar system. And the best way you can do it is in union.
Beautiful. And I am so grateful for this message of exquisite new possibility that you're bringing through your own alive experience in this moment, and also through the wisdom that comes through you. And I want to just let the listeners know you can find out more about Anaya on our website. It's anayasophia.com. So that is AnayaSophia.com. And also, if any of the listeners would be interested in re-listening to this beautiful transmission from Anaya, remember that you can go to the summit page, which is thesoulmatewithinsummit.com, and you can sign up to get the summit package with all the recordings, which is just a wonderful opportunity to re-listen and to deepen in the exploration. To just invite Anaya, if you'd like to tell the listeners a bit more about what you're doing this year, and also a bit about your home.
Yes. Well, my little soul has spoken to me and said, for the next 10 years, you're going to literally just push out this huge wave of life force, and then that's it. You're coming in for a more soulful end-of-life period. So I am going to be really out there for the next 10 years. And at the moment, the places I go to the most are the West Coast, so California, Oregon, and over on the East Coast of America as well. Europe, so I'm based in Europe. And I will be doing a Australia and New Zealand tour at the end of 2017. So I'm going to be active for a while. And yes, and this year in the summer, Divine Relationship comes out with Inner Traditions. And the work is threefold in nature. So there's women's work, which is the sacred body awakening with myself. And then there's the circle of brothers, which is what Pete does, working with the men and what this means for the masculine taking this path. And then, of course, we do our sacred marriage work together, where we work with the couples and individuals, you know, people who are not in relationship. And just to make it really important, this work is for everybody of every sexual persuasion. This is not just for heterosexuals. This is very, very, very mm-hmm. important. And that's it, really. Yes.
Anaya, thank you. Thank you so much for that, and also for that emphasis on inclusivity in our sexual orientation. I can feel that there's so much riches that both you and Peter have to share with the world, and may your work be richly blessed. And thank you so much for spending this time with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Shakti. Deep, deep, deep blessings to you and to all the listeners.
Thank you.